Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, this is the Herd, loaded today on a Wednesday, live in Los Angeles. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me on a Wednesday. We are packed today. Brian Cox stops by. Rob Parker on the show. Nick Wright. Joel Klatt. Huge, huge weekend of NFL football. Eagles, Giants is tomorrow on Thursday night. Joy, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. You know, in this business we have called the Herd, the greater the player, LeBron James, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, the greater the coverage. We talk about you more. If you're not a great player, we tend not to talk about you unless you get into a controversial situation. But a guy that we talk about, and I'm putting my foot down, this is the last day I'm ever going to talk about him, I think, is Dez Bryant. So Jerry,
I think.
And something blows up or he ends up on the Patriots. Okay, so Dez Bryant gets talked about a lot. Like a lot. By me, by Skip, by Shannon, by shows after us. Last 5 years. A lot of talk. So Jerry Jones came out this week, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, biggest brand in the NFL, biggest brand in the world in professional football. And he said, you know, the thing in Dallas is we haven't had a true number one receiver for years. My definition, you know, like Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, and not a lot of guys around the NFL. We haven't had a guy like that for several years. Well, of course, Dez Bryant, who has no life and sits on Twitter all night, fired back several times. At first, he showed a little class, and then he did what Dez does. He freaks out. He gets emotional, and he goes on Twitter and says things that, you know, I'm the man. Pay homage to the man. Here's the interesting thing about Dez Bryant. Does Dez Bryant realize if he was on like 30 other NFL teams, he'd be completely irrelevant? He would be. He would be completely irrelevant. The Dallas Cowboys made Dez Bryant. You put him on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who cares? We never talk about Mike Evans. Mike Evans today is better than Dez Bryant was at his peak. We never talk about Mike Evans. Only people talk about Mike Evans are fantasy football fans. I mean, here's what's amazing. So I thought to myself this morning, let's take Dez's best years. He had 3 years where he was a legitimate number one playmaker. 3 years, 2012, 2013, 2014. So that was at his best. So if you take the greatest 7 or 8 wide receivers I've ever seen play, Jerry Rice, T.O., Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Calvin Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, Marvin Harrison, I went and looked at all of them. On average, Jerry Rice, 12 great years. Maybe not his rookie year. Maybe not his last year. 12 great years. Chris Carter, Randy Moss closer to 8. Marvin Harrison closer to 8. Calvin Johnson closer to 9. Calvin could have played 3 more years. The average for great receivers was 9 years. Dez Bryant was great for 3. If Dez Bryant was never a Dallas Cowboy, he'd be Mike Evans. And Mike Evans already has a better career and appears to have another 4 or 5 years of Pro Bowl level play. In fact, let me redo blind resume once in a while. For our radio audience, I'll put Dez Bryant, player one, player two. These are the blind comparable stats. And it looks like pretty much the same guy. 530 catches, 7,000 yards, 3,000 yard seasons. And do you know who the players are? Dez Bryant is one of the players. Okay, he's one of the players. The other player is Mike Wallace. Did you even know he was on the Eagles? It's his fifth team. He's hurt again. On the Eagles, he's had 3 targets and officially no catches. If you look at Dez Bryant and Mike Wallace has had the better career. I don't remember ever talking about Mike Wallace on a radio or TV show. Mike Wallace, I think 60 Minutes. I don't even think football player. I think the old guy on 60 Minutes who passed away several years ago. Dez Bryant should count his lucky stars. He is the most over-discussed, over-hyped, over-tweeted, self-deluded player in the NFL over the last decade. For 3 years, he was pretty good. Mike Wallace was better. Mike Evans is better. We never bring them up. I don't know if he got a shoe deal. I don't know if he got endorsements. I don't know that much about Dez Bryant. But he should thank Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys every day that he's on shows like this. He's discussed on shows like this. I turn on the radio all the time and listen to sports radio guys. Dez Bryant's a topic. Mike Evans is never a topic. I mean, even among Bryants, there's Kobe Bryant, the Cubs' Chris Bryant, the former football coach Bear Bryant, and Bryant Gumbel. They're more interesting and more productive than Dez Bryant. So officially on this show, this is the last time I'm ever talking about Dez Bryant, I think, unless he becomes a Patriot. It's incredible. Does this guy understand how lucky he was? He got Tony Romo, he got Jerry Jones, he got the star, he got Dallas, he got the brand, and he gave you Mike Wallace. It's incredible. Let me shift gears to this. From somebody who is overrated to somebody I think historically that's actually kind of underrated, LeBron James. I have never talked about the NBA in early October in my life. Not one time. The NBA season usually opens second, third week of October. I don't talk about it until like the Christmas games. You know, defenses are changing. There's a lot of experimenting first 2 months. Of course, it's all changing now because this is A-Rod to the Yankees. This would be like Tom Brady going to the Cowboys. LeBron James is going to the number one brand in the NBA, the Los Angeles Lakers. And yesterday, tonight they're playing the Golden State Warriors in Vegas. It's an exhibition game. I'll watch 30, 40, well, okay, I'll watch the whole thing. And I would never do that before. But Klay Thompson, a member of the Warriors, his dad's a broadcaster for the Lakers, came out yesterday and he said, you know, I think LeBron and the Lakers is actually pretty cool. San Francisco, LA have always had a rivalry. I think it's actually pretty cool. Adds a ton of interest to the league. I expect him to greatly improve the Lakers. They've obviously got a bunch of guys who are proven now. There's a moment in this article by Bleacher Report, though. For all of you doubters on LeBron and the Lakers, there is a line in this story that says, with a supporting cast of Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Rajon Rondo, Josh Hart, Lance Stevenson, the Lakers aren't that much better than the Cavs squad. Timeout. Apparently this person's television doesn't work because he didn't watch the Cavs. I'm going to line up to you how much better the Lakers are than last year's Cavs team with LeBron that got to the finals. I'm going to line them up. So let's put Cleveland on the left, Lakers on the right. The best player for Cleveland, now that LeBron's gone, is Kevin Love, who now is not only on the back nine of his career. Kevin Love is an 18-point-a-game defensive liability. The Lakers' best player is Brandon Ingram, who's a significantly better defender, averaged 16.5 in his second year, and projects, if you look at his averages, to be a 22-point-a-game guy this year with LeBron. LeBron's already intimated, yeah, I'm going to get him the ball. The second-best player for the Cavs no longer fits in the NBA, Tristan Thompson. He can't shoot. Sort of an issue in 2018. The Lakers' second-best player is Kyle Kuzma, who has a rookie average 16 a game. His numbers should go up, you know, because he'll be better. The third-best Cavalier is George Hill. 11 points, 3 assists, career average. I'll say the Lakers' third-best is Rondo. 11 points, 8.5 assists. You know, passing's big for guards, and a much better defender. The fourth-best Cav is J.R. Smith, I think, who's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but I do like him. He is fun and can shoot, but he may be the worst defensive player in the league. The fourth-best player for the Lakers is KCP, a two-guard who's younger, longer, more athletic, hell of a defender, and right now every bit the shooter. All the Cav players are older and getting worse. All the Laker players are younger and getting better. I did not mention Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart, who Laker coaches, Doug Gottlieb told us yesterday, love both and project both as starters. Folks, if you think this team's going to struggle to get to 40 wins, you're out of your gourd. The Cavs without LeBron in the last 4 years, that's with Kevin Love, that was with Kyrie Irving, that was with J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver. Last 4 years without LeBron, they were 4-23 in the weaker East. The Lakers last year without LeBron and a bunch of babies, a bunch of kids, won 35 games in the significantly tougher Western Conference. This Laker roster is younger, more athletic, quicker, longer, significantly better defensively. You are out of your mind if you don't think this supporting cast for LeBron is better than that Cleveland supporting cast. Their best player is Kevin Love, who is not only on the back nine, I don't think Kevin Love's that far from retiring. If you listen to him talk, he'll go into broadcasting. I think Kevin Love is close to retiring. Brandon Ingram's got 10 years left. Kuzma's got 10. Lonzo's got 10. Josh Hart's got 10. KCP's got 8. So they play the Warriors tonight. It doesn't really mean anything. He is the number one player on the number one brand. But when I hear people doubting if this team's going to get to 40, 42 wins, he got the Cavs to the finals. Multiple years with Kyrie, without him. We're 4-23 without LeBron. Last 4 years, that was with Kyrie and Kevin Love. Lakers going to be just fine.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So I saw a story this morning. What ails the Packers offense? Aaron Rodgers' knee or other factors? Ooh, boy, Colin, you talk a lot about Aaron Rodgers. No, you do. I just react to it. And the question is, what does ail Aaron Rodgers and the Packers? I'm going to talk about something. We thought coming into the season, Aaron Rodgers is back and he's healthy. We thought their only roadblock was the Minnesota Vikings in division. I'm going to talk about now a number that is rarely discussed, but may perhaps be the closest and most accurate signal to how successful you'll be. It is called PD, point differential. The leader in college football right now in point differential is Alabama. Three of the four teams remaining in baseball, Astros, Dodgers, Red Sox, lead in run differential. Over the course of a season, the best teams historically separate from others. More blowouts, fewer big losses. If I told you, who do you think leads the NFL in point differential? You'd be like, Rams, you're right. Chiefs, you're right. The Chicago Bears have the exact same point differential as the Kansas City Chiefs. You see that right there? Rams, Chiefs, Bears. Let me ask you something. Well, Colin, prove that it really matters. Okay. Do you know who led the NFL last year in point differential? Patriots, Eagles. Do you know who led the year before? Patriots, Falcons. In fact, since 2013... the leader in point differential has made the Super Bowl every year. In fact, there's only one team, the Arizona Cardinals in 2015, that were top two in the NFL in point differential and didn't make the Super Bowl. And if I recall, Arizona made the NFC Championship. Lost to the Panthers, who, by the way, had a better point differential. Folks, Bama, baseball, football, point differential is how you know who's separating. There are three things everybody wants in the NFL right now. You want a young roster full of good players. Check. You'd like a dominating defensive front. Bears, check. You'd love to have a clever young coach. Matt Nagy, check. Now, I don't think Mitch Trubisky is special, but he's younger and healthier than Aaron Rodgers, and he's got Matt Nagy working for him. The minute John Gruden inexplicably decided, I don't see the value in Khalil Mack, and the Packers had a chance to get him passed and the Bears got him, I said, you'll rue the day because you're going to face Khalil Mack 10 times next 5 years minimum. He could be alongside Aaron Rodgers at practice. He'll be Aaron Rodgers' number one target 10 times next 5 years. Actually already faced him once, helped hurt him. It'll be 9. I think Packers and their fan base thought Minnesota was their only roadblock in that division. You start looking at point differential. They got the right coach. Their defense is sick. Almost all their good players are young and signed up for a while. That's the Aaron Rodgers dilemma. That's why you had to get Khalil Mack away from Chicago once the story surfaced that he was available. For the record, the Raiders last in the NFL in sacks, and the Bears are number one in the NFL in four or five different categories, including getting to the quarterback. What ails Aaron Rodgers? Well, I'm not sure this moment, but for the next 5 years, Chicago is going to be what ails him.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Great is a really important thing. And there's very little great. There are very few great NBA players. There are very few great quarterbacks. But great creates clarity. Because you look at great and go, oh, if we draft the right quarterback, man, we're good every year. Look at the possibilities. If we get the right coach. Right now we have something very rare in the history of football. This has never happened. We have the greatest college football coach in the history of college football and the greatest NFL coach. And they're winning, dominating simultaneously. Okay? That doesn't work that way. Generally, you don't have the greatest this against the greatest that. You had Jack Nicklaus, he was done playing, then came Tiger Woods. You know what I mean? You have like, it doesn't work that way. You had Wilt, then he retires, and then, oh, here comes for the next 20 years. Then it's Jabbar, then it's Shaq. And we have the best college and the best pro football coach. And Nick Saban has created clarity. Over 55 coaches in the SEC have been fired since Nick Saban arrived. Because every athletic director in the South, in the SEC, goes, well, if we get the right coach with all these great high school football players in the South, we should win 12 games a year every year. Why not? And so Nick Saban has created clarity. You get the coach right with all those great Southern high school football stars, you should absolutely vie for a national championship every year. Nick hasn't even gotten the quarterback right most years. Now, similarly in the NFL, Bill Belichick, 18 years, has created clarity. Oh, in the NFL, 20 different coaches in the AFC East alone, hired. Oh, if you get the coach right, I could have Matt Cassel when Tom Brady gets hurt. I'd still win 11 games. Clarity. Great creates it. You compare everything to Saban, everything to Belichick, everything to LeBron. The next Saban and Belichick in the NFL right now is Sean McVay of the LA Rams. I just saw in Vegas the first head coach to be fired list. And these guys are going to get run out of the league. Jason Garrett, Dirk Cutter, Vance Joseph, Bill O'Brien, Hugh Jackson. They're not going to last. Because Sean McVay not only won, but it's the manner in which he won. The Rams were on Hard Knocks with Jeff Fisher. Jared Goff was their number one pick and appeared to be an absolute bust. And then Sean McVay is hired with just one training camp. Jared Goff's first game, 21 for 29, 300 yards, and he won 46-9 in one training camp. It's not that Sean McVay won. It's the immediacy in which he won. Sean McVay is creating clarity for every owner in this league. How many years do I have to give Dirk Cutter, Bill O'Brien, Hugh Jackson, Vance Joseph, Jason Garrett? Well, Colin, the Rams have spent a lot of money. Oh, really? Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. Brandon Cooks. You have all those guys on your fantasy team? Do you know who Andre Whitworth was before he became a Ram? John Sullivan at center. Andrew Whitworth. Do you know who they were? Didn't have him on your fantasy team? Well, what about Todd Gurley? What about him? There's a lot of good backs in the NFL. That offense doesn't look like the Rams. Great creates clarity. Belichick, Saban, get it right. You should win every year. Sean McVay is going to have, over the next 5 years, he is going to run guys out of this league. When he took Jared Goff from the Fisher year to now he's a potential MVP, I'm looking around if I own the Texans. How long do you need with Deshaun Watson? How long do you need? I see the kid in L.A., Sean McVay. How many years with Deshaun Watson? Oh, he's hurt again? I'm Jerry Jones. Jason Garrett. I don't know. Goff was terrible. Now he's great. Great also eliminates excuses. And when I'm watching this Rams team and I'm watching this offense and I'm looking at these hot coach lists, McVay is the next guy. He's a paradigm shifter. There's just no excuses anymore. If you can take Jared Goff, what he looked like under Fisher, and make him an MVP guy the first 2 years back, there's no more excuses. Jared Goff looked terrible. There's no more excuses. Jeff Fisher got to a Super Bowl. Can't be that bad. It's amazing what that guy's doing. By the way, there's a story out that the Philadelphia Eagles, I don't even understand this. I'll even say this. Joy, when the Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl, wasn't their big brand, "We're aggressive"? That was their big brand, right?
Yes.
Like, that was their thing.
Aggressive underdogs.
Fourth down, go for it, underdogs. So I see a story this morning. Philadelphia, the Eagles are reportedly calling the Bills to ask about LeSean McCoy, the running back. Why would you think that small? Why wouldn't you go after Le'Veon Bell? Le'Veon Bell's the prize on the market. Who cares if you only get him for a year? What's the cost of another Super Bowl? I mean, I'm sorry, but how many Super Bowls does Dallas have in that division? Five? How many do the Giants have? Four? How many does Washington have? Three? Philadelphia's got one. Correct me if I'm wrong, but these windows close quickly. In 2 years, you're going to have to pay Carson Wentz. You just restructured Fletcher Cox's deal. What are you doing with Shady McCoy? Le'Veon Bell's a bigger, stronger, younger, faster, better pass receiving Shady McCoy. What are you doing? Aren't you the aggressive guys? Le'Veon Bell, all-time minimum 62 games, has averaged the most scrimmage yards per game in NFL history over Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, Terrell Davis, and Walter Payton. And you worry about Shady McCoy? You got a guy in your own state. I mean, Carson Wentz has 2 years left, and you're going to have to pay him a fortune. We saw the Seahawks. The minute they had to pay Russell Wilson, window closed. You got to take advantage of what you're paying Patrick Mahomes and Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott and Jared Goff. Why do you think the Rams are backing up the Brinks truck? Because in 2 years, they're going to pay Jared Goff $30 million a year. That's why they're paying Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald. That's why they're paying, you know, Aqib Talib and Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods and Whitworth and Sullivan and Gurley. I mean, folks, the Eagles depth chart, they play tomorrow night against the Giants. They're relying on Wendell Smallwood and Josh Adams at running back. I'm going to go with Le'Veon Bell as a slight upgrade. I'm reading that story this morning. Philadelphia. Philly. You're aggressive. You're the go-for-it team. Who cares if you rent him? What is the price of another Super Bowl? Your offensive line's banged up. He could help solve it. Your secondary can't hold a lead. What would solve it? Ball control on offense. Philadelphia. Yap, 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 yap. You talk aggressive, be aggressive. Shady, go after Le'Veon Bell.
What's up, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast on Colin Cowherd's podcast network. If you like Colin's show, you will like mine. I talk a ton of football. This week got a big show. Drew Brees breaking records. Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett. How long will that last? Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers' relationships falling apart. Again, you can listen wherever you find your podcast. Just look up 3 and Out with John Middlecoff on Colin Cowherd's podcast network.
You ever hear people that complain about anything that's new?
Yes.
A lot. You know why people do that? Because a lot of people don't want to change because change equals work, and most people are lazy. A lot of people are just lazy. And if, oh, I got to learn this program. Oh, I got to do this assignment. Oh, I've got to change my protocol. All these people in the NFL whining about the quarterback hits. No, as a coaching staff, you have to have more meetings. You have to have a couple new meetings. You have to implement stuff at practice. It means more work. And a lot of people are lazy, including NFL coaches. Bill Belichick was asked yesterday. And by the way, the Patriots haven't been flagged for a roughing the passer all season. Oh, what a shock that they actually put the time in and the work in and the teaching in. When people complain about not liking new stuff, it's because they're lazy and don't want to do the work. Trent Dilfer was on our show a couple days ago. And we were talking about how the Bears offense looks different. It's clever and smart and it's new. And the Rams offense and the Patriots in Kansas City. You watch a lot of these NFL teams and you're like, they just put more time in. And Dilfer talked about that.
People think that all NFL coaches are created equal. They're not. There's many that are just way smarter than the rest. And there's some that are just lazy. And they've just kind of climbed the ladder because they know the right people. and they've said the right things and they've done well in interviews and they got an owner to fall in love with them or a head coach, or they're loyal. Half of the NFL jobs, just because you've been loyal to a guy. Then there's the special ones. There's the McVays, that they're just smarter. They're just better. They just work harder than others.
I see this all the time. Whenever I hear a comedian complain, well, it's too PC. I mean, you used to be able to tell certain jokes and you can't. You're a comedian. Brah, write new jokes. It just opens up another door. But that means you're going to have to spend 10,000 hours writing another 20-minute set. And that's hard, and it takes a year even for a great comedian. But when I hear comedians complaining about it's too PC now. Oh, yeah, you got to treat women with respect. How terrible. Yeah, it is too. We now have, like, feelings for people that don't have power historically. Then write new jokes. You know, when you watch Tom Brady, Tom versus Time, weren't you, you had to have when you watched that. You were watching a guy and you're like, holy crap, he puts this much time into it?
I watch tape all day Monday, all day Tuesday, and then Saturday before the game I watch films. I don't know why I can sit here and watch it and, you know, process information quickly, but I can. Running and lifting has been much harder to develop than this. This has kind of been in me. I mean, I could literally, like, just watch film all day.
Most guys in the league aren't sitting at home off season watching film all day. Of course the Patriots haven't been penalized. It's hard. A lot of people are lazy. Don't put in the time. By the way, Andy Reid, last 25 years, he's had Jeff Garcia, Michael Vick, Donovan McNabb, Ty Detmer, Alex Smith. He's had to implement new offenses every quarterback. Now he's got Patrick Mahomes, who can do things Alex Smith couldn't and Ty Detmer couldn't. And Michael Vick could do things that Andy Reid just keeps reinventing what he does over and over and over. I know this about Andy Reid, and I don't know him that well, but I know this. Dude puts in the time. He's doing Tom Brady in the offseason. That's why Kansas City starts. Andy Reid's teams historically are so good in September. He spends the offseason in a room dialing up new plays and creating new plays.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, when I hear people say, well, you can't look at these records in the NFL because they're making life easier for quarterbacks. Folks, this is the way the world works. When I first started in this business 30 years ago, we didn't have the internet. I mean, seriously, I had to read newspapers, the AP Wire. I can do my prep for this show in half the time I used to. Everything's on my phone. I can have a staff. We can find quotes, find video, find everything in life's easier. That's why they have Silicon Valley. That's why we have technology to make your life easier. In the NBA, it's easier to score. You can't hand check people. In hockey, it's easier to score. You can't grab people. That's what sports should be. Sports should be not for the mediocre player. So all sports should be designed to elevate the best player. So they're free to score goals. That's the way sports should be. You don't build it for the middle-class athlete. You build it for the stars and allow them to be stars. You don't want people clutching and grabbing Kobe Bryant in his prime. That's why it's interesting. The New York Giants passed on drafting a quarterback for Eli Manning, knowing full well that if you look at the rules in the NFL, like, it's all quarterback. So Sam Darnold, he can win now. Baker Mayfield can win now. Josh Rosen this weekend can win now. Josh Allen, they passed on all of them. That's why I said when Odell Beckham came out and said what he said, it's the elephant in the room. Eli Manning's an iPhone 6. It's got name value. You can still make calls on it. But when you go to the Apple store and you compare it to the other iPhones, it looks outdated. And to me, all Odell Beckham did is mention the elephant in the room. Yeah, he didn't say Eli was terrible, but he talked about what everybody in the world's afraid in New York to talk about. The media won't talk about it. The owner won't talk about it. The GM won't talk about it. It's going to be rough sledding here, man, because Darnold's going to win a lot of games for the Jets. And Baker's going to win games for Cleveland. And Josh Rosen's going to win a lot of games for Arizona. And with that, we bring in Brian Cox, who not only played for a Super Bowl champ, multiple Pro Bowler, he coached on 5 different teams, including, by the way, it should be noted, the Jets and the Browns. So you didn't like the whole Odell Beckham. You're old school. You right. Don't like players yapping.
Well, the biggest thing is, one, there should have been something said to Odell in training camp about, we don't do interviews without the permission of the PR department here. And I fault, in my opinion, Pat Shurmur because it falls into the leadership or lack thereof that I talked about when he got the job.
So you didn't buy into Pat Shurmur?
No, no. All you had to do is look at his record. You know, when you look at his win-loss record, and then you look at the fact that he is not a confrontational coach. When you have guys that speak out, you need to be able to go to them. And if there's a confrontation that needs to take place, you need to be confront it.
Okay, you were on five staffs. Who is a confrontational coach you liked?
I like Mangini.
He's confrontational.
Yeah, he'll go and he'll bring it up and he'll say, "Hey, this we got to talk about this." Dan Quinn is a guy that'll bring it up.
Atlanta.
He's not always. It's like kind of sneaky. He kind of expects for the coaches.
Was Belichick confrontational?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah.
But Pat Shurmur to you is non-confrontational. So therefore, when Odell Beckham says that, nobody confronts him on it.
Well, the biggest thing is not only do they not confront it on him or confront him about it. When Pat Shurmur was at the press conference, he said, "Go ask OBJ about it. Talk to Odell." You're the head coach. We're talking to you about it. You have to make the decision on this. There's nothing to go talk to him about. There should have been a fine or something in place to prevent Odell from having that interview.
By the way, you also said you thought there could be a Philadelphia. You've been really good on the NFC East. You also said, watch out for Philadelphia. Parades, everybody's writing a book. It looks like a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover.
It's a hangover. And, you know, the biggest thing is John DeFilippo not being there. Their offense doesn't look the same.
It doesn't look the same.
It doesn't look the same.
Frank Reich is now the coach of the Colts. DeFilippo is where?
Minnesota. Coordinator.
So they lost their two offensive guys. Both left.
Right. And when you look at their offense now, they brought Mike Groh in from Chicago from a staff who had gotten fired, and they passed over Deuce Staley and made him the pass game or the run game coordinator, made Al go to coordinator. To me, it would have been the simplest thing to do what Kansas City has done with Eric Bieniemy and make Deuce Staley the coordinator because he's been there, he's been in the system, and then Doug Peterson would help him because he works with the quarterback anyway. That would have been the simple solution to me.
Yeah, when you watch him, Carson Wentz isn't playing poorly. It's not that. They're just not the same offense.
But the receivers are not catching the ball. He's not getting protected as well. He's getting hit a lot more. They don't look the same. They don't look like they play with the urgency. They don't look like they play with the zip and the zeal that they played with last year. It looks like a different ball club.
By the way, let's go to stay in the NFC East with the Dallas Cowboys. Jason Garrett got a lot of heat, but you are going to defend him.
I defend him. Here's my point. Okay, 2 weeks prior, Indianapolis coach went for it on fourth down, didn't get it. Everybody crucified Frank Reich. You fast forward to the game, Dallas on 3rd and 1, they get a ball to Ezekiel Elliott. He gets stopped. So why would I go for it on fourth down? On the 40-yard line of my opponent, that if I don't get it, they're going to get 30 yards and get a first down. I'm going to play it by the book. I'm going to kick it, pin the offense down, which Houston caught the ball on the 10-yard line. Hopkins just made a phenomenal catch to move him in the field goal range. So, to me, it was the right play. You don't take a chance at that point unless you're trying to lose the game.
You know what's funny about this? So, Garrett's getting crushed for not going for it, Brian. Sean McVay went for it, but
there's an asterisk.
He wasn't going to go for it.
Exactly.
Sent the punt team in.
And nobody's crucifying Pete Carroll for calling the timeout.
So McVay's natural instinct, the gunslinger, with Todd Gurley, with a great young quarterback.
Goff was to punt.
With two great possession receivers, was to punt.
Right.
That most coaches go by the book, and the book is like, don't, if you don't get it, two first downs, and Houston walks out with a win.
And I'm not going to get at Frank Reich, but I'm going to say this. Frank Reich stood up there and defended, "We're not playing the tie." Well, what do you plan to do, lose? Because oftentimes when you screw up as a head coach and you make a mistake and it doesn't work out, you screwed your team. Nobody crucified him, but they crucified Garrett for doing the right thing, and it ended in a bad result, but that's what you do in that situation. You don't get a game away at that time.
Yeah, fans tend to look at the result, but there's generally a book on how to do things and how not to do things.
Fantasy football is screwing real football up because people that play fantasy football, they're invested now, and when they lose a game, all they know is, "I lost money, you cost me a championship." But there are real consequences, and people's lives and jobs are at jeopardy when you get people to go on and say, Jason Garrett ought to be fired. Now, no, man, come on now. You're playing with that man's livelihood. Because at the end of the day, he did the right thing.
You've coached with the Jets, Browns, Dolphins, Bucks, and Falcons. If you coach the Steelers today, what would you suggest to the GM and the owner to do with Le'Veon Bell?
I would not allow him back. Period. You can't play for us anymore. Because here's the idiotic thing. You coming back week 7 because you say I'm tallying up or trying to figure out how many hits my body can take. Okay. When has $14 million been a bad thing for a football player to play? And regardless of how many hits you take or whatever, I can't depend on you as a teammate or as ownership right now if I'm the Steelers saying, how do we know you're going to get here and not get a couple paychecks and then quit again? James Conner's been playing well enough that Ben Roethlisberger came out the day and say he should get the carries anyway. To me, I'm moving on from Le'Veon Bell from this point forward. I'm trying to get ready with James Conner because next year he's going to be my feature back anyway. I'm going to get him the experience. And then if I'm another team that's contemplating signing Le'Veon Bell, how can I, in good conscience, give him the kind of money that he's looking for when he's not dependable? You can't count on him because if he's doing it to the Steelers, when he gets paid, what is he going to do to your organization? He might never show up.
But you do it for Todd Gurley, though, because...
Because Todd Gurley showed up. Todd Gurley went to work. He didn't negotiate in the media. He went out there and did it. You can't argue his
numbers.
Never
been suspended.
Never been suspended. You can't argue his numbers, and you can't argue the type leader he is, the person he is. You can't say the same for Le'Veon Bell. He's been late. His teammates have come out against him now. He's down there doing rap concerts and promoting and on all these tours. And while we're up here putting in work, as a teammate of his, if it were me, I would be so uncomfortable. I'm not in a position that I would say that I would wholeheartedly welcome him back without – he would have to do some explaining. He would have to really show me. It's like a relationship, okay? If you hurt a woman and you go back to that woman, it ain't never the same because she never trusts you the same. I don't trust him, so I'm like a woman in this situation. I could never trust him again.
That's interesting. How about the Chiefs?
The Chiefs.
Now, I would think, because you've been very brutally honest, so you probably think all of us are going too crazy on the Chiefs.
No, I'm absolutely not. But what I am willing to point out is 2 years ago when you watched the Chiefs, everybody said, Doug Peterson is doing a great job. Andy Reid, this Doug Peterson offense. Last year was Matt Nagy, got him a job. You know, and now Eric Bieniemy is doing the job, and you don't hear anything about Eric Bieniemy as offense coordinator. You hear Andy Reid's offense now. They're not giving that man credit. That man has been the running back coach there. He's been in a position where Andy Reid is bringing him along. He doesn't have the experience working with quarterbacks. Andy Reid is taking a more hands-on approach with the quarterback position. But you got to start giving Eric Bieniemy some credit because this offense is even better than it was under the prior two offense coordinators.
Oh, let me tell you something. Mahomes is really good.
He's the real deal. So it's not like a Dak situation where he's going to play out of his mind the first year and then he's going to back up. He's Brett Favre kind of guy. He's a gunslinger mentality, the way he can run the ball.
You were a dominant linebacker, a multiple Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champ with the Patriots, and a linebacker, and you were a vocal guy. You talked, you led, you were a Sean Lee, you were directing traffic. Who was the best, not even the best quarterback, who is the best young quarterback you faced where you knew instantly, okay, there's a lot of chatter, he's for real. Who was the star you saw really early? Because a lot of people are telling me all these young guys are great. Mahomes looks different to me. And I like Jared Goff, but he didn't look like Mahomes.
Probably the best young guy I saw in my playing days would have to be Peyton Manning. You knew it right away how good he would be.
Why? How?
Even though that record. You would play in the game, and you would hear him make all these calls. So the game to him was more mental than physical. And you knew that you couldn't outsmart him from day one.
Day one.
He had that it factor. Now, he couldn't throw the ball. If you got him outside, you can say, oh, I got him. We playing cover two, ball not going across the middle of the day. But if he got you in that dome, he could make all the throws and you were in trouble.
And you could tell it instantly.
You could tell it instantly. Even though they were, you know, bad.
They were bad early, first couple years.
You could tell it with him because he ran and he orchestrated that offense from day one.
Man, if Brian Cox, you don't mess around with Brian. If you miss practice, Brian doesn't like you.
No.
If you talk, Brian doesn't like you. You'd be tough coach.
Hey, at some point, players play, coaches coach. So you can't sit up here. The other thing about that, you go back to the OBJ thing. When you look at that interview, how many times did he say I in that interview?
I
don't want to be I don't want to be held back anymore. I want to be great. I want to be is it about the team or is it about what you want? And like the interesting thing to me was last week playing against my son team Carolina, so I never bring up Carolina. He was happy that they lost because he got his numbers. And he was saying this was the most competitive, this was the best we've been this year. It was all about him getting his numbers. It wasn't about the team winning the game. That's the sad state to me.
You see a very selfish player in OBJ.
I see a very selfish player. Sometimes you get that wolf in that sheep's clothing. He come and I'm a competitor. I'm competing for the team. I want to do this. But really, when it comes down to it, he wants the numbers so he can say, look at how great I am.
Good seeing you.
Nice seeing you.